Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
In dollar terms, the nation's pastime is American-style football. That's the only kind of football to the millions of people who spend billions each year to watch the teams take the field with the precision of war generals, only to face the chaos and thrill of actual games. The popularity of the NFL comes from the consistent excitement of its content, but the profitability may come from something else. It turns out that the cash-rich NFL has a very sophisticated financial playbook, complete with sympathetic politicians, taxpayer subsidies, and fine print that allows the NFL to sometimes act more like a charity than a $9 billion a year entertainment company. Greg Easterbrook is a contributing editor at The Atlantic. His new book is The King of Sports: Football's Impact on America. Easterbrook says the NFL and churches share more than just doing most of their business on Sunday.
The main headquarters of the NFL in New York City is a tax-exempt operation. On paper, it appears to be a charity. The commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, paid himself $30 million in the most recent year for operating this thing that claims to be a charity serving the public interest. I calculate that about $1 billion a year in tax favors and direct public subsidies go to the 32 franchises of the NFL. Most of them have had most, if not all, of their stadiums paid for at public expense. 12 of the NFL's teams clear a profit just on public subsidies. In other words, they receive more in stadium subsidies than they need to operate their stadiums. And then anything they get on ticket and of course, television revenue, that's a bonus.
Now, is this a strategy that the NFL has implemented very cleverly from the beginning? Or is there some sort of, you know, nitrous oxide gas that gets turned on whenever there's a meeting with NFL officials that just allows the people to depart from their reason when they deal with this business?
Well, a good example is the deal that the Minnesota State Legislature just made to fund a new stadium for the Minnesota Vikings, which is owned by a family whose collective net worth is well north of $1 billion. The Minnesota State Legislature gave them $500 million anyway. And Mark Drayton, the governor of Minnesota, said, well, everyone knows this deal doesn't make any sense. Well, so why are you agreeing to it? If you go back in the history of the NFL and other sports in general, but let's stick to the NFL, the stadium subsidies date to about 50 years ago, at a time where there was only a fraction of the amount of money in professional sports as there is today, even if you adjust to current dollars. At that time, most NFL owners could not have afforded to build a stadium. And the feeling about NFL stadiums was that they were a civic good. They had to be subsidized in the same way that you couldn't have public libraries unless they were subsidized. Well, that was 50 years ago. No longer true, hasn't been true in decades. Now the owners are all billionaires, and yet we've created this assumption that public sports venues should be subsidized by the public, and then the owner of the team should get to keep all the profits. That assumption is half a century out of date, and yet state legislatures, Congress, and governors of states like Minnesota don't do anything to change that assumption.
Well, a sort of a grandfathering of an old tradition applying these kinds of rules to stadiums makes some sense to me, but I don't understand how the headquarters of the NFL would qualify for something like that. It's an office building, for heaven's sakes.
Well, I can tell you how it happened. That doesn't make it right. During the 1960s, there were two pieces of legislation passed by Congress whose primary effect was to waive antitrust law for the NFL so that the two leagues that existed at that time could merge and then jointly negotiate television contracts. So to start with, the NFL is in effect exempt from antitrust law. Imagine how much Apple would pay to be exempt from antitrust law. Well, the NFL is. While the 1966 legislation was being passed, NFL lobbyists slipped into it a key phrase that's the essence of the lobbyist art, the seemingly harmless phrase slipped into legislation. They added the words professional football leagues to the IRS description of what a not-for-profit charitable organization is. Now, obviously, they're not a charitable organization, but they got these words slipped in, and the headquarters of the NFL has been using that language to avoid taxes on its income ever since. This is not illegal. They're doing it perfectly legally. As Michael Kinsley famously said, the scandal is what's legal. And it's legal for them to do this. But the key point is, if they were honorable men, and they're all men at the top of the NFL, if they were honorable men, they would not abuse the public trust in this way. They're not honorable. But I fault more Congress for refusing to stop them than the NFL's leadership for sticking its hand into the public cookie jar.
Does the popularity of the NFL make it so powerful that it can ignore realities that other businesses have to deal with and represent billions of dollars in expenses? Or does the NFL believe it deserves to have this set of exemptions?
There is a sense of entitlement. I think the owners believe they deserve this money. A lot of them made what were then risky financial decisions in the 60s, 70s, and 80s to buy franchises that now are worth far more than they used to be. And the key thing about them, key thing number one is that they're publicly subsidized. Key thing number two is that they disclose nothing to the public. With the exception of the Green Bay Packers, which have public shares and do disclose their numbers, the other 31 franchises receive public subsidies but disclose nothing. Can you think of any other organizations in American life that receive a substantial amount of their income from public subsidies and yet disclose nothing? Well, if you're in that position, owners, they feel like they're sort of a feudal elite that cannot be touched. And until such a time as Congress takes action, I suppose they're right about that.
So they just basically tolerate this situation because they know it will never change.
Well, it certainly could change. One of the questions that I ask in the book, King of Sports, is given how important football is in American society, and it is, and how popular and yet how subsidized it is, and it deserves to be popular, by the way, the games are terrific, but given how subsidized it is, why wouldn't there be a populist stand to be made against the NFL? Why doesn't some crusader in the House of Representatives or in the Senate say, I'm going to crusade against these subsidies, football is the people's game, we're going to keep the games, but we're going to get the subsidies out and make the NFL pay its way? I think that there would be a lot of populist appeal to that. But you look at the current Capitol Hill, you don't find anybody who's doing that. All current residents of Capitol Hill here in Washington, D.C., seem to consider their campaign donations and their invitations to sit in owners' boxes a lot more important than the public trust as regards football.
Greg Easterbrook, contributing editor at The Atlantic, author of the new book, The King of Sports, Football's Impact on America, out this month. Thanks so much, Greg.
Sure thing, John.